Yahoo Fantasy Football Forecast.
It seems like you know ball the way you talk, so.
Thank you. Someone clip that.
I'm not playing in your league unless I can draft myself.
Outside of football, I live a pretty boring life.
With Matt Harmon.
This is an anti-getting greedy podcast here.
Been seeing you guys' podcast kind of blowing up here recently, so glad to get on.
It's Tuesday, January 17th, and we have what was basically a flawless, might seem a little aggressive, but a fantastic weekend of playoff football here to discuss. We got a lot to go over. We got a lot to get into. Here to do that with us today is Recap Royalty, Andy Behrens. Andy, welcome to the show. First of all, I got to ask you the one pressing question that I think is on everybody's mind coming out of this past weekend. How many times have you sang the Burger King jingle to yourself or to those around you in the last 3 or 4 days?
That's some pretty effective advertising, because they're getting like a lot of buzz marketing out of it too, right?
Yes.
Because we're all complaining about it, but that's, you know, that's fine. I don't know how many times I've seen like Whopper, 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 Whopper in my feed. Tip of the cap to Burger King. Very well done. Spectacular wild card round. It really never lets us down. The Bucks Cowboys game felt a little bit disconnected from it, both in quality and, you know, the fact that it was a Monday game and all that. But great weekend. Really fun stuff. Good show. Good show, NFL.
Yeah, I don't know if the goal of marketing, and I don't know what the goal of marketing is, because it's not my job. My job is to, you know, talk about football. What a weird thing to say out loud. But I don't know if the goal of marketing is just to get me to sing the jingle and potentially ruin my marriage. If that's the goal of marketing, yes, then goal achieved. If it's to make me buy Burger King, that hasn't particularly worked yet. But hey, that's just another topic for another day. Burger King, I'll sing the jingle if you want to sponsor the podcast. I'll say that. Let me just leave it at that. All right, no more messing around. Let's get down to business. We are going to talk about that disconnected game here first. Cowboys 31, Buccaneers 14. Andy, the 2022 Buccaneers died as they lived, man. They were boring. This was the team that we got all year long. Frank Schwab could not have been any more right on this very podcast, saying like, hey, all of this concern about Dallas, you know, going to face the Bucs and Tom Brady's record versus the Cowboys, throw all that crap out, because the Bucs are a bad team. The Cowboys are not a bad team. It really was we'll talk about the Bucs here in a second. I want to focus on the Cowboys, because it was just an incredible game by Dallas. It started off a little tight, but that did not last very long.
Yeah, opening couple series were like was threatening to be a really boring game, and I thought for a second we were just going to get the worst version of the Cowboys, right? Mm-hmm. The only thing I put in the show notes for this was I just thought it was a triumph of a game from Kellen Moore. You just don't see that many like walk in touchdowns, and when you do, you know that a coordinator has just really got the opposing defense where he wants them, right? Like, they just caught Tampa Bay leaning all the time. From the first score of the game, Tampa defenders are distracted by everything but the tight end who's streaking down the middle of the field, right? Like, unchecked. Walk-in touchdown from Dak. Walk-in touchdown from CeeDee Lamb. It was just for all the heat that I assume Kellen Moore has been taking locally and has deserved at various points, just a magnificent game plan, right? And made things. Dak obviously had a great game. There's no two ways about it. But he, man, that game plan sure made things easy for Dak. They were not evenly matched teams. You're right in the way that you're like, how do we get 66 pass attempts from Tom Brady and it's so boring and so uninteresting? That shouldn't be. But the receivers were underwhelming. There were drops. It's just a really, really uninteresting offense. And it's just a team that, you know, obviously great a few years ago, but, they're at the end of their run and they're done. They were cooked. And the Cowboys were wonderful. They obviously they're heading into a very different degree of difficulty matchup now, but, and I'm really looking forward to that thing, because this version of the Cowboys that's a really exciting team. That's a dangerous team.
I know. Yeah, it is a very exciting team to think about. I'm glad that you highlighted Kellen Moore, because that was that was sort of like a hire me as a head coach type of game from Kellen Moore. You know, he's gotten a couple interviews. And I also think, like, I know Kellen Moore has taken a lot of crap. He's been the coordinator, I think, since either 2018 or 2019. He predates Mike McCarthy, right? Like, he's one of these Cowboys lifers that Jerry, like, identifies when he's a player. It's the same with Jason Garrett, and then ends up eventually pushing him up the coaching ranks. But I've always really liked the way that Kellen Moore designs offenses, and I think sometimes the sequencing and the play calling and the actual rhythm, the flow of the game, has gotten away from him. I don't think that's as much of a criticism this year. I think the offense has been really, really good, despite the fact that their personnel is, you know, sort of whatever. I think Kellen Moore's had a great year. I think he would be a deserving head coach, and he's also, like, you know, I know that Washington fired Scott Turner. I know that, you know, the Jets fired Mike LaFleur, mutually parted ways with Mike LaFleur, whatever. But those guys sort of fit in the same bucket to me as, like, these guys whose offenses are really well designed. And I don't think they've always got that sequencing and pattern and flow of the game right. But when you let these guys kind of learn on the job, and, you know, Dallas is not usually thought of as a patient place, although they've given these, you know, guys like Jason Garrett and even Wade Phillips before him, you know, years and years and years of run out. It does eventually bear out, like, the fruit eventually bears there, like, that these guys figure it out on the job. So I was excited that Kellen Moore had that game in a big spot. And Dak Prescott, man, I saw somebody, I'm going to butcher the stat, but I think I saw something to the, like, Dak Prescott recorded the most EPA of, like, any playoff game ever that it's been tracked, since EPA has been tracked. So just a great game by him. And it did start, you know, Troy Aikman was on him early about being, like, tight and being tight in the pocket. And
Aikman was on him a lot. Like,
he was on him a lot.
Yeah. Even deep into the game.
Part of me thinks, like, you know, Aikman's got to sit there and hear Joe Buck be like, and that's, you know, just Dak Prescott with another Cowboys record. Aikman's going to be like,
yep.
God almighty, man. But yeah, Aikman's usually, which, I mean, you got to give him credit. He's pretty hard on the Cowboys. You got to give him credit for that. But I think that Dak rebounded really well, was just precise. And, you know, they just had the Bucs defense number basically from, you know, the second or third drive, pretty much. Like, they knew what was coming. They knew what pitch, like, as soon as they felt out the game and they figured out the coverages and all that, they figured out where pressures were coming from. They were able to really get after it. So, you know, the Cowboys will go forward, like you said, tough matchup, obviously, next week against San Francisco. But when Dak plays like that and the offense flows like that, they can absolutely beat anyone.
Yeah, they absolutely can. And I hope that we get this version of the Cowboys moving forward, because that has the potential to be, you know, given the history of the two teams, all that, the level at which they're both playing most recently, that this could just be a spectacular game. I hope it is. I hope it's not, like, obviously, I hope none of them are duds, but I'm about as excited for that as I am for any game next weekend.
Yeah, me too. I think that when we look at the Bucks, you know, Bucks postmortem, welcome to the wilderness. I mean, pretty much is how I feel about Tampa Bay. Like I said, they died as they lived. They're a poorly coached team. They're a poorly prepared team. They play sloppy. They leave plays on the field in the passing game. This is, if you were unfamiliar, you know, if you just tuned into the NFL playoffs, this is the first football you watched all season long, and you're like, what is the deal with this, like, Tampa Bay team? What's going on here? You know, they can't hit deep passes. Like, Brady's missing Mike Evans by a mile on short passes. Mike Evans is, you know, letting a pass go through his fingertips at the very end of the game. What's going on? He's like, welcome. This was the Bucs experience all year long. So this was not shocking there.
That was every Mike Evans game, with the exception of the spectacular Carolina game, right, when fantasy managers needed him most, if you actually still made it all the way to the finals with Mike Evans on a roster. With the exception of that one game, like, this was Mike Evans' entire season. And the numbers were fine, 70-plus receiving yards. But, man, that team has left so many yards and so many points out there all year. I have no easy explanation for it, because it really looks as if Brady and Evans, like, every game this year, it looks like they're just meeting for the first time. And hey, we can forgive it because they have no chemistry. They've never played together. But in fact, they have played together and they've played really, really well together. And yeah. Mike Evans scored a million touchdowns like last year. It's wild. It is very difficult to explain. And now Tampa's, of course, in this spot where is anybody coming back other than Rashad White? Right. Like, I don't know who the Tampa quarterback is next year. I don't know what their plans are for either of these, any of their receivers. And I, Like
Godwin got a new deal last year. You'd imagine he's probably the one you feel best about being back.
I would feel best about him. I don't like, is Leonard Fournette going to be there? I know he's got some money next year, but he looks.
Well, they
cooked.
Rested him. They rested him in the back half of the year. You know.
So oh my gosh, that was phenomenal. And I generally do not have complaints about Troy Aikman, but I thought that was really funny that he gave us a hard sell on the idea that the Bucs had simply been, you know, holstering secret playoff weapon Leonard Fournette. I mean, Leonard Fournette has looked a step slow, maybe two steps slow. He's obviously playing through some stuff. Credit to him for doing that. But they didn't just have Leonard Fournette wrapped in bubble. Like Leonard Fournette was not a helpful player late in the season. He was not a helpful player in this game. They were the worst running team in football this year. They passed more often than any other team, and to no effect. Tom Brady threw 66 passes and averaged 5.3 yards per attempt, which is obviously just dreadful. So like the raw passing total was fine, but again, 66 attempts and so many yards left out there.
Yeah, such a listless ending to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers Tom Brady era, which was obviously a super successful venture by Tampa Bay for the most part. And it's just, it's going to be weird if, you know, Brady obviously didn't commit to coming back. He didn't commit to anything. We know he's obviously changed his mind about this before. I still expect him to probably play next year. I can't imagine that's the note he wants to go out on. But at the same time, if like you're going to really ask, you know, casual football fans to get excited about Tom Brady, you know, and this big free agency pursuit or whatever, and that was the last glimpse we got of him. Not a very exciting thing to go in on here, but I agree. Yeah, I think the Bucs are totally headed for, you know, a rebuilding wilderness type of situation. You know, Blaine Gabbert's not even under the great Blaine Gabbert, who owes Bruce Arians like his entire career. He's not under contract next year. It's basically Kyle Trask and that's it. I have no idea what the 2023 Tampa Bay Buccaneers look like, other than you mentioned Rashad White, Chris Godwin, like Mike Evans certainly could get moved. If I was another team, I would still be interested in like buying low on Mike Evans. I think there hasn't been necessarily anything, you know, wrong with Mike Evans outside of a few drops and miscues and stuff like that. But I think Tampa Bay could be open for business. And honestly, like we could see coaching staff changes too. We don't know that here Tuesday morning as we're recording it, but I don't feel great about Todd Bowles as the head coach going forward. I don't feel good about Byron Leftwich as the offensive coordinator going forward. So I think we could see some coaching staff changes there. Let's move on to another game here. 49ers 41, Seahawks 23. We're doubling all the way back to Saturday, baby. And this was this game, Andy, was interesting just because you got to kind of remember, I know I just said the final score, but you got to remember that the first half was close here. And then Seattle just, they put up a fight, very valiant effort, but they just got overtaken by the amount of talent and the way that talent is put in a great position by Kyle Shanahan on the 49ers here.
Yeah, just a stupid amount of talent, skill position talent on offense for the 49ers. And like this felt like what it should have been all year, or certainly like once at the point that you have Christian McCaffrey on the roster too, and you've got McCaffrey and Debo and Ayuk and Kittle, and like I mean you should be able to put up 40 on anybody. And this was obviously really good to see. The number of times that like this is a collegiate thing. The number of times that a 49ers receiver is the only person in the camera frame is wild to me. That's
such
a testament to their skill and also obviously the scheme and the offense generally. But you just don't. So that's Big 12 football. That's not the NFL. That's not how this normally looks. And then, you know, because of the number of sort of comfortable throws that are available to Brock Purdy or whoever is quarterbacking in this scheme, there's no player that I will. This is a weird thing to say because nobody had an opinion on Brock Purdy coming into the year. But in the end, like there's not going to be a player that I am more wrong on than Brock Purdy, because I just flat out didn't believe it after one game. Obviously, when things go according to script for the Niners, they all look great. Garoppolo looks great. Purdy looks great. When things go haywire and he's like in a really noisy pocket and things are breaking down, there's no reason why Brock Purdy should look this comfortable. But like it got to the point where you're just expecting something great to. Brock Purdy's getting flushed. Well, they're probably going to score. Like that's what you were thinking by the end of the game. Like that's crazy. It's such a testament to how much he's improved, and obviously the coaching of Brock Purdy, his commitment to getting better. We've read all the stuff now about him really working on his mechanics, and he's like added like that's a weirdly common story for quarterbacks to actually add velocity when they come into the NFL. I know it was a thing that it wasn't part of the Aaron Rodgers story, right? And it's part of the Brock Purdy story, but he just looked great. Like his second half was fantastic. The ball to Jennings was fantastic. Like just what a game.
Yeah, I think you can definitely nitpick Brock Purdy's throws. Like he should have definitely led the deep Jennings pass. He should have led him more outside, not led him mm-hmm. into the hit. You can definitely nitpick all that stuff, but he's the last pick in the draft, right? Like we have to always come back to that. And,
oh, was he?
And I have heard that before. My sources are telling me he was the last pick in the draft, and that is
your research
a pretty big
team.
Deal. Yeah. My crack research team here in the podcast studio are telling me that he is the last pick in the draft. So, but coming back to that, your point about how comfortable he is in the eye of the storm is so well taken, because I think that has been an issue with Jimmy Garoppolo that he's never really gotten better with. Like he has never been comfortable. Like when things start to break down, his second punch often does not land. That's been basically who he was as a collegiate player. It's who he was with the New England Patriots, and pretty much throughout even his great years at the 49ers. If you can get him off script, if you can heat him up a little bit, good things are not coming. But Purdy has been incredible. Incredible, but like comparison wise, he's been great as a scrambler. He's been great improvising off script. That's been what's so fun to watch about him, because I think he has not just kept the ship afloat with Jimmy Garoppolo out. I think he's actually elevated this offense to another level here. There were moments in this game where I was like, uh-oh, is Purdy, feeling it a little bit, the early pressure, stuff like that. But he rebounded, and how can you not rebound in this offense? You're so right that there are times, when Ayuk catches like a dig route or a crossing route in the middle of the field, and there's no one there. Debo catches a 3-yard pass, and it is like Florida, like the gate, the great Gators teams of old playing like, North Dakota, Southwest State, or whatever, where Debo catches a 3-yard pass and he's not just going to take it. He does often take it for like 10, 15 more yards, but it's like, now he's going to take that 3-yard pass. He could probably house it. Less like he did in this game. I mean, it's unbelievable stuff. It is like the fully realized Kyle Shanahan offense. He's not just doing like the old Mike Shanahan outside zone stuff anymore. They're running like power stuff with Christian McCaffrey. It's a crazy offense right now. And like, if you love football, I don't know how you don't love watching this offense.
Yeah, it was like a month and a half ago, 2 months ago that we had jokes about the fact that like, here's this offense that has Debo and McCaffrey and Ayuk and Kittle, and they're somehow averaging just like 22 points a game. How the hell is that? Well, this is what it ought to be. Like now you've got the full expression of Kyle Shanahan's offense with brilliant chess pieces. And that was really fun to watch. It's a lousy defense. It'll be really fun to see him against a game record like Micah Parsons, right? Like we didn't even talk about him. He was a big part of the story against Tampa.
He
was just blowing it up. And that'll be really fun because we've got some defensive difference makers in that game as well. And obviously another huge challenge for Purdy. But I can't stress it enough. Like it'd be, normally backups, even like second string quarterbacks in the NFL, you know, all you're hoping is that like when things go according to script, they can make the throws. And when things go off script, they don't do anything disastrous. But you just don't get backups where like, oh man, things have gone off script. They're probably going to score. Brock Purdy is going to make something. That's just not what your third string quarterback does. It's wild. It's an incredible story. And man, tip of the cap to him.
Yeah. And I think one last point on this offense, there's a tendency, and I get it from sports fans sometimes. This doesn't tend to bother me or whatever, but like the idea of, you went out and you created this like super team or whatever, like with some of the times the Bucks were this team, like, okay, you went out and you got Tom Brady and then you got Antonio Brown and you got Gronk and Leonard Fournette, and I get it, you have Mike Evans, Chris Godwin, but then you go out and you get Julio Jones and Russell Gage, who we didn't mention either, who God, Russell Gage, like, you know, thinking about that guy as he went to the hospital. Yeah. He's still, as of now, in the hospital right now. But, you know, you go out and you get all these guys, like a super team, whatever. The 49ers, outside of McCaffrey, like, these are all homegrown guys. Like, these aren't, you know, we think of it as like, wow, this super team star-studded offense. But Debo was a second-round pick. George Kittle, your guy, was like a day three draft pick. I mean, and he's developed into one of the best tight ends in the NFL. Ayuk is a guy who they drafted in the first round, but took a minute to become the fully, and nobody knows that better than me, that he took a second there to become the fully formed player that he is right now. Purdy, obviously, last pick in the draft, as my research team just told you. Like, these are... Even Elijah Mitchell, who's like an underdog kind of guy and still plays a big role in this offense. You know, and these are guys outside of McCaffrey that are all homegrown guys. And McCaffrey certainly has been the final sprinkle on the cake here. He's been the final icing on the layer on top that's taken it to this another level. But this is just a testament to team building and stuff like that. I think that if you, like I said, if you really love football, if you really love offensive football, how do you not get gassed up by this? And there's not even that twinge of like, ooh, it's a super team type of thing. Like, this is a team that the 49ers have built and strived for years.
I feel like we don't do the super team thing, like the cringing about that, as much in the NFL as we do in, you know, people do it in baseball, they do it in the NBA, certainly. Like, it often doesn't work in the NFL, right? Yeah. Like, you can't just go, like, you have a shopping list and you throw them all on an NFL roster and immediately you're a contender. Like, that just doesn't work very often. And usually the teams that have the buzziest off seasons and everything is different, you know, they're probably gonna face plant. They're gonna do the Denver thing.
Yeah, that certainly seems about right. On the Seahawks here, before we move on, a little postmortem for them. I don't want to say like, oh, good job, and this is all, you made it here, congratulations type of thing, because I know Pete Carroll and the guys don't feel that way. But you look at this team, and it's still so young on defense. We've thrown some criticism at the defense, but they're very young over there. They're very young on the offensive line. You imagine those two units can progress after a fantastic draft class on both sides of the ball and elsewhere this past year. Really, I think Seattle is set up well to continue to rebuild. Now, if it's me, I'm bringing back Geno. I'm franchising Geno. I'm doing whatever I got to do to keep that intact. Because I wouldn't say Geno was obviously perfect in this past game. Wasn't flawless or anything, but still made some great throws without any fear, threw into the teeth of some tight coverage to DK Metcalf on the outside. Metcalf had a big game with 10 catches. Like, you have Metcalf, you have Lockett, you have Kenneth Walker as a running back who I think you can continue to progress and grow. Like, that passing game, I think, is the kind of the old man group of the roster right now, but I would bring Geno back and, you know, continue to develop the rest of the roster.
Yeah, it's a it's quite a, like, I don't know, of all the, just off the top of my head, of all the teams that are facing huge, you know, direction of the franchise sort of decisions right now. What Seattle does at quarterback to me is one of the biggest ones, because it's obviously a great situation. You've got wonderful receivers in Metcalf and Lockett. They could decide now, like, and Geno just balled out this year, obviously. 30 touchdown passes, leads almost 70% completion percentage. He was wonderful. Absolutely deserves Pro Bowl recognition, all that. Like, he was great. But you got to decide if you're going to have a Geno Smith era, or if you want, because they have, like, they've got the fifth pick in the draft, and then they've got another first round pick. So they have all the assets that you would want to just go ahead and get the number one pick if you want that. Like, they are very much in the discussion. They can probably outbid anybody if that's what they choose to do. Like, you could have a decade of Bryce Young if you want it, or you could have the Geno Smith era, and they gotta choose. And Geno made it a choice. Like, Geno really made it a discussion. I assume coming into this year, they had not imagined a scenario where anybody could even entertain the thought of being like, maybe we want to just do the Geno thing for the next 4 years until he's 36 or whatever. But now that's like a valid discussion. I get it. I don't think it's where I'd go. I think, you know, but it comes down to their opinion of the quarterbacks at the top of this class. And it's a really good class. I don't know. I wouldn't be that quick to say, oh, they got to just re-sign Geno and run it back.
Yeah, I guess it is definitely worth a discussion. And it kind of, do you look big picture? Do you look short, you know, short term, whatever? Because I think I do think that the Geno contract negotiation will be really fascinating. Obviously, he's really loved there and there's a ton of goodwill. But what type of contract do you give Geno Smith? I think that's sort of the weird part right now, because he's 31, 32 years old. Like, he's not exactly a young ascending player. But we'll see what they do there. We have a lot of time to debate and discuss what Seattle is going to do at quarterback. Let's move on to the next game here. Jaguars 31, Chargers 30. Oh, the Chargers, man. 27-0. Seems like this game's in the bag. But, man, it was the biggest chargering of all the Chargers that have ever chargered what went on in that game. Unbelievable. We'll come back. Let's put a pin in the Chargers here for a second. Jaguars, man. I mean, I thought Trevor Lawrence was going to pull the full DeLome. You never want to go full DeLome, but second half, Trevor Lawrence came out firing, and it was incredibly impressive.
The throw, I guess, that I want to highlight, the play that I want to highlight here, and I, you know, there'll be a couple, but it's not second half Trevor Lawrence. It was the throw to Evan Engram for the touchdown at the end of the first half, which like, if they don't score there, the math just isn't with them. There's just not time, right? Like, they needed that touchdown to even entertain the idea of coming back in that game. They needed to score that touchdown. And obviously he had already thrown four interceptions to that point. And to pull the trigger on that ball, because that was like, as open, but that was like high level NFL open, right? Like, it's only open for about a second, and only if you can put it over one guy and between two other guys and give your tight end a chance to go up and get. And it was just a beautiful throw. And to just fearlessly put that ball in the air in those circumstances, having already thrown four picks, two of which were legit bad throws, right? Like, one was batted twice and whatever, we can forgive that. And the other one was on fourth down and it didn't really cost him much, but like, two of them were terrible throws. The ball to Engram was just incredible. And again, if they don't, you know, sometimes it's easy to know when the hinge point of a game is, in real time, right? Like, it was pretty obvious in the Bengals game with the Ravens, right? Like, there was a defensive touchdown, huge swing. But I felt like the play in the Chargers Jaguars game, as you look back on it, it's right before the 2 minute warning in the second quarter, when the Chargers have like inches to get a first down, right? It's like third and one, but it's really third and like a foot or something like that. And they call that weird jet sweep to Bandy of all people, and he's not even expecting to get the ball, and he kind of turns away from it and becomes this fumble, and they recover it, and then you got a kick, and that set up that gave the Jaguars like a 2 minute opportunity that they fully took advantage of, and that's like where the whole game swung. Because if you just run the clock out there, it's done, right? Like, there's not time. Wild. Just a super entertaining game. Feel terrible for Chargers fans for Austin. Like, that's wild. But on the other side of this, just an incredibly impressive game from Trevor Lawrence to rebound from that, like, in real time and come back and just play a badass half of football after playing a super sketchy half.
It was sort of like a microcosm of who the Jaguars were all year, because they have had moments of brilliance. They've had incredible Trevor Lawrence games. Then they've also had some of these games where it's like, do we need to have a conversation about Trevor Lawrence and how good he is? And like, that was the first half and the second half. And obviously, I'm glad you point out that last drive, because I was having conversations with people about like whether Brandon Staley is like a good coach. And we'll talk about Brandon Staley here in a second. And the one thing I think you could definitely say is like objectively true with Brandon Staley is he is a good defensive game planner. The game plan that they had in the first half, where it's like, you know, we're going to just man the crap out of these guys. We're going to be physical. We're going to make throws really tough. Like, we don't trust, you know, Zay Jones and Marvin Jones. We're gonna try to push these throws to the out. Just pretty similar, almost very similar to what they did against Tua, we're gonna push. We're gonna push these throws to the outside, and you're gonna have to take tight man coverage throws, not to, you know, Tyreek Hill and Jalen Waddle. It's actually, by the way, it's gonna be to Zay Jones and Marvin Jones and stuff like that. Okay, no, you know, no disrespect to Zay Jones, who had a good season, but you get where I'm going with this whole thing. And that was a great defensive game plan. And then they completely, I felt like they completely got away from it in the second half, but still that first drive against, and I wonder if that maybe that haywired Staley's brain, because I think there's the other thing you could say is objectively true about Brandon Staley is he's a terrible in-game manager, you know, not just like the fourth down field goal decision, stuff like that. The playing time stuff that we've critiqued, you know, with Mike Williams in the final week of the season. My God, like to go away from things when they're working is a bit pretty big problem with this Chargers team in general. And I think that maybe getting that last drive there as they still were sort of in their primary game plan, it felt like the Chargers, maybe that sent them a little haywire in the second half. The whole team you could felt was tight. You could feel the whole team was tight for the LA Chargers. It felt that way. Felt that way with how they called plays. It felt that way with how they managed the game. You know, maybe not every single player on the sideline or anything like that, obviously, but I think that was a big thing. And meanwhile, the Jaguars just had a faith in themselves and had faith in their quarterback, and that faith was rewarded.
Yeah, and obviously the Jaguars have all seen them come back in improbable circumstances before, so I'm sure that was really helpful. The Chargers are also not, you know, there's another thing that I wrote in the pod outline. They're not a team that is built to just grind you to dust when they've got a big lead, right? Like they're not, I mean, they were the thing is obviously Austin Ekeler had a massive fantasy season, but it kind of masked the fact that they were not very good at running the football otherwise, right? Like Austin did it in a million different ways and he's a super versatile player. Their run game was like 30th in the league, averaged less than 4 yards per carry, right? Not super efficient. And then, obviously, in the second half, it was also like what they tried to do was pretty predictable. They only ran Austin Ekeler on first. He got 5 carries. They were all first down carries. They didn't really go anywhere. And that was it. And then we're throwing. And they just kept giving the ball back. Right. Like they are not the team that is built to just go on an 11 minute drive that, you know, just drains your soul away and it crushes the math of the game. And then they win. Right. Like they're not built for that. And wow, did it show.
Yeah. And obviously, I don't think it's all, you know, Austin's been really hard on himself on the podcast all year long about it, despite the fact he's having this incredible fantasy season, despite the fact that he's scored more touchdowns than anybody the last 2 years. He's mentioned that he was not fully happy with his season. And a part of it was the running game stuff. And I'm not sure it's all necessarily his fault.
No.
But that's certainly the way, if we got anything from Austin on the podcast this year, even if it's not all his fault, he's going to take a lot of the blame himself, you know. Altogether, by the way, like they weren't one of the worst like success rate rushing teams. They weren't one of the worst like EPA per rush teams. But I think a lot of it was when they called the runs, as you mentioned, by the way, as we found out this morning, Joe Lombardi's not going to be the offensive coordinator of this team next year. We can dive into that and all that means here. But the timing of when they ran, the offensive line was an issue all year long. Guys got injured. Guys didn't have the seasons that they were hoping for. So I think the run game was, but that was a great point. Like, of any team in the NFL that was not going to be able to close out a 27-0 lead with their run game, it was going to be the LA Chargers. That's not their thing. And it comes back to the passing game, and we could just kind of do the postmortem on the Chargers right now. They do fire Joe Lombardi, you know, shout out to Joe Lombardi, all that stuff, you know, but my God, I'm never rooting for somebody to get fired, but something had to be done with this passing offense even before this game, man. This has been one of the most frustrating passing offenses in the NFL to watch this year, despite some of the talent that they have.
In large part because they just don't really maximize the talents of a quarterback who can put the ball anywhere on the field, right? Like,
yeah,
that's just really annoying. And maybe that's a reflection of what they think they have in their receiving core, I guess.
But that's their fault. They built this receiver core.
Yeah, absolutely. They just don't go downfield enough. And again, like Justin Herbert can put the ball like wherever he wants it, 70 yards downfield, and we just don't get enough of it. I mean, I feel like that was the story of his season last year. The number of, like, you know, receivers that you'd barely heard of or receivers that you forgot were on the roster were scoring 65-yard touchdowns because, you know, like Herbert, again, he can, like, the ball can go anywhere, and we just didn't see enough of that this year. A lot of short stuff. They were overwhelmingly pass heavy all season. And just not particularly inventive with it. They obviously have plenty of talent. I don't know if there's a, is there a choice to be made on Keenan Allen at this point? I don't know. Yeah. I don't know if they keep rolling with what they have. It feels like at a minimum, and they're doing this already, but you have to dismantle a lot of this coaching staff. Staley is a difficult call. And I was thinking about this as you were discussing Kellen Moore and the idea of like coach development at the NFL level, which, you know, maybe that shouldn't be a thing at the head coach level, but like, wasn't Brandon Staley like a D3 position coach? Like,
yeah, not that long.
Like 5 years ago, he was at John Carroll or something like that. And
oh, yeah, dude, this guy was coached at JMU. Okay. Like shout out to JMU, one of Virginia's finest universities, of course. But I mean, my God, JMU, bro, give me a break.
Yeah, I mean, we've I think there's a lot to like about Staley, but we can't very well expect him to just land in the NFL and be Bill Belichick or anything like that. And it's kind of true of McDaniel too, right? Like these guys who are just like, they're going to have to develop on the job a little bit, and they're going to have to be like in the fire and experiencing choices that they've not had to encounter at the levels that they've previously visited. And you also don't want to just shake the Etch-a-Sketch on your team every year. You can't just be like, well, that was a deflating loss, we've got to fire the head coach again. You can't do that. Like, that's no way to win either. So they've probably got to run it back with Staley and the rest of this offense. But Lombardi probably had to go.
Yeah. Again, I think Lombardi definitely had to go. On the Staley thing, I think it sounds like they're going to keep Staley. So like we can have this conversation or whatever, but I definitely think that's probably
to his credit. I should also say that like his players support him like fully, like everybody was saying great things, but they don't have like a Baltimore Ravens scene going on with the Chargers right now. Everybody was saying really nice things about their role and about Staley.
No. Yeah. I think Staley, the guys probably like playing for him and stuff like that. I think he does have to do some developing. That's a totally like, you know, it's a totally fair point. Just to coming back to the Joe Lombardi thing, it does make me think of when Joe Lombardi was last an offensive coordinator, which was with the 2014-2015 Detroit Lions. You'll recall that their quarterback was Matthew Stafford, a guy who had a ginormous arm. And the final year that Lombardi was the offensive coordinator was 2015. Matthew Stafford had a 6.45 air yards per target. 6.45. This team has Calvin Johnson. They have Golden Tate. Obviously Golden Tate's slot receiver. Theo Riddick has 99 targets and 80 catches. They have Eric Ebron, the great Eric Ebron. I mean, this team had some receiving talent. They had an ultra talented quarterback, but they struggled. They almost like overcorrected with Matthew Stafford, where early on in his career, he was like a completely reckless gunslinger. Then they put him in the Drew Brees box, and it has felt too often like Justin Herbert has been in the Drew Brees box, which of course is where Joe Lombardi comes from and everything. So I think that they obviously have to do something, to progress this offense, to progress Justin Herbert. And a lot of it, I do think, comes back to the receiver talent. Because the crazy thing about Mike Williams, like everybody's freaking out about Mike Williams. Oh, what if Mike Williams is in this game? Dude, Mike Williams, like he's not a separation guy. He's not a number one receiver, like despite the name, they have guys like Keenan Allen, who I think is a fantastic player, but Keenan Allen has a pretty specific role at this point in his career. They desperately need some receiving talent there. Like if they walk into next year with this receiver core, with Josh Palmer and Mike Williams and Keenan Allen, I mean, they're not serious. That's for sure.
Yeah, this is one of those teams, the Giants are another, where it just, there's a number of receivers who are obviously available right now are going to become available. Hopkins, maybe Mike Evans, like this is one of the landing spots.
Yeah, it just feels like somebody younger and faster, though, than either of the two guys that you just mentioned there is probably what they need. But all right, we'll take a quick break. When we come back, we will recap the games from Sunday. All right, Bills 34, Dolphins 31. Man, this game, probably was more fun than it had any right to be. You know, Tony Romo, I'm texting my brother-in-law, who's like the biggest Tony Romo fan of all time. And I'm like, man, Romo is really trying to put lipstick on this pig early, you know, early in the game before kickoff, like telling us how close it's going to be. And boy, did Tony Romo prove me wrong, because this game was super close. But Andy, we would be remiss if we didn't shout out the MVP of this game, which was absolutely, without question, the play clock. Just dunking on Miami left and right. Buffalo's MVP of this game was absolutely the play clock. I mean, whether it was Skylar Thompson, whether it was Mike McDaniel, they had no handle on when they were going to hit zero in terms of the play clock.
Yeah, and that, like, the obviously the critical delay of game end of the at the end of the proceedings. They had a terrible play dialed up too. Like if it weren't for the delay of game, right? Like they just got engulfed at the handoff. It was like a shotgun handoff, right? They got dropped 2 yards, 3 yards behind the line of scrimmage. That was really rough. And it felt like a, you know, and I really like Mike McDaniel too. I'm so happy to have him like in the collection of NFL coaches. He's got that, like, I love his press conferences where he's hilarious and nobody in the room is laughing because he's got that deadpan like Mitch Hedberg delivery and all. Like, I just love Mike McDaniel. I find him really easy to root for. This was some really awkward, poor game management. And I like he's also been like refreshingly candid in press conferences too. And he was talking about how they thought they had a first down and then they realized halfway, you know. Halfway
that is that is quite candid.
Yeah, like what a wild thing for a coach to say. You just don't normally expect that level of honesty. It probably happened that way. And then on top of it, obviously we're dealing with a super young, you know, depth chart quarterback who had no right being, you know, getting that team as close as they were. You couldn't have expected more from him. I will also say, like, this Miami is the only opponent that Buffalo could play this poorly against and hope to beat that was in the playoffs. So really, really lucky on that front. You know, that this thing where Josh Allen is back to giving the ball away, that's got to end. You're obviously, troubling. You know, you've got some degree of difficulty matchups coming up, and they just have to be better in all respects. We got a good Gabe Davis game, by the way. I thought by and large, after some really terrible Gabe Davis games at the end of the season, it feels like we never just get a middle of the road Gabe Davis performance, but he was quite good in this. Cole Beasley, like reanimated Cole Beasley was pretty good. So they did just enough. And I don't know, like if I'm a Miami fan, I feel pretty good coming out of this loss, because I can tell myself a story about what it would have looked like with Tua. And I don't know. I guess I feel pretty good. Although Miami, of course, is going to be linked to like Brady, and they're going to be linked to free agent quarterbacks as well. But I think I'd feel pretty okay.
Your point about Josh Allen is so true, that, you know, if he plays like this in a game against Kansas City or a game next week against Cincinnati, they're not beating them. And you know, I think we didn't discuss this enough on the preview podcast, but one of the biggest mismatches in this game, like a way that this could stay close, and it did, you know, the Dolphins pass rush and the way they play aggressively up front. And there was certainly some live by the sword, die by the sword moments for Miami's defense. Like they gave up some, Stephon Diggs had like 96 yards in the first quarter. He took, you know, Xavier Howard, you know, in just single man coverage on a cover one look, like he took it all the way down, you know, the field. So there were definitely some moments where Miami gave up big plays. You know, Khalil Shakir let one slip through his hands deep down the field. Obviously, Cole Beasley banged one off his hands, interception. So there were moments where the receivers let Josh Allen down. You know, Tony Romo criticized John Brown for running a wrong route at one point that resulted in one of the interceptions. But they heated up Allen to the point where he took 7 sacks. He had all those turnovers. That mismatch with the Dolphins front and the Bills offensive line, like that's something to watch going forward. If the Bills offensive line can't provide adequate protection, I don't think they've been a very good pass protecting team all year long. If they're able to put that pressure on Josh Allen going forward, does it result in more mistakes going forward for Buffalo? On Miami, I guess I'd feel good if I was a Dolphins fan, but like, I don't know. The Tua thing is kind of a hard conversation to have, because it sounds like they all want Tua back. Like, I would imagine it sounds like Tua probably wants to be back. Obviously the concussion stuff is really scary, really difficult to talk about, but you know, I guess if Tua's back there next year and like he's consistently available, they would be a really good team.
Yeah, Tua's best games were fantastic. The Baltimore game was absolutely fantastic. Like when things were really humming for Miami, he looked great. Like, I don't know, it wasn't accidental that he ended up in some early season MVP conversations.
Yeah,
not that totally was ever going to happen, but like his best football was great. And like they've come out over the last couple of days and they've said that they don't think he's a concussion prone player. They don't expect the concussion issue to linger into next year. Like, I don't know, not a doctor, but at the very least, he has a pretty extensive concussion history now.
Right.
And I'd be petrified about that. If I were him, if I were a fan of the team, whatever, somebody who cares about Tua, like, that's an issue. That's definitely a worry. But I also give, completely unrelated, I give Mike McDaniel a lot of credit for crafting an offense around what Tua can do and what he can't do.
Totally.
And I think by and large, they've made a bunch of really good choices. And I think given all the work that you've put into that, you got to stay the course with him, right? And you've got to continue to build on like the best moments from this season. And if I'm a fan of that team, I feel okay. I feel like coming out of this game, I can definitely convince myself that we win it if Tua is a quarterback.
I completely agree with you about all the Tua stuff, and I think they designed a great offense with him and around his strengths. And you know, there are parts of me that was like, well, this offense with how good these skill position players are, which by the way, not like a banner moment for Tyreek Hill or Jalen Waddle in this game. I mean, Jalen Waddle especially made some pretty tough moments at the catch point for Jalen Waddle in this game. So keep that at the back of mind as I'm saying this. Like, in theory, this should be a quarterback proof offense. You know, like, you could stick anybody back there, and they run the ball pretty well. The Raheem Mostert obviously missed this game as well. You know, Raheem Mostert probably not the guy you want to count on long term to be your starting running back, but because of the injury history. But they run the ball really well. They have these skill position guys. Mike McDaniel schemes things up really well. The spacing in the offense is great. Yada, yada, yada. It should be quarterback proof, but it really wasn't. Like, I mean, you couldn't just they're not doing what the 49ers are doing right now and sticking a seventh round rookie back there and just acting like nothing happened. You know, that's not the case with the Miami Dolphins. And I guess that worries me for next year and beyond, because I agree with you. Like, I think you stay the course with Tua, but like, what level of this seems just cold and harsh, but like, what level of commitment do you give Tua? Because if he has one more concussion, like, is he missing, you know, a month of the season, or is his career in question or whatever? And it's like, I guess you just have a better backup plan than you had, but you already went, I mean, this is a Teddy Bridgewater thing. You already went out and you got like a high quality backup in Teddy Bridgewater, and he was a disaster this year from an injury standpoint. So I don't really know. Like, the Dolphins probably have to make some sort of move at quarterback to the point that they're not like, all right, Tua's unavailable for a month plus. Like, we have to roll with this Skylar Thompson guy. No, just
and Teddy was probably the right plan. That's just bad injury luck there. But you need to have somebody at least of that level. I don't, you know, off the top of my head, I don't know everybody's contract. I don't know if one of the Saints guys is available next year, right? But you need like a veteran who can step in and just sort of run the show.
I'm sure both the Saints guys will come available if that's really what you're at. Yeah, Andy Dalton's starting for this, making starts for this team in 2023. Let's just go ahead and put that prediction on the books right now. I like that call there. All right, next game up here, Giants 31, Vikings 24. You know, Scott Pienowski called this the Fraud Bowl. I think that was definitely the case with the Vikings, and that sort of proved out to be. But, man, I don't know. The Giants were – this is a really, really fun game to watch.
Such a fun
and especially
game
on the Giants side.
Such a fun game. And I get it that it was the Fraud Bowl, but like, I don't know, we got 14 playoff teams now, and you're just, you're going to have four teams that can't win the Super Bowl, right? Like, in any given year.
But the fraudiest one was probably the division winner here, which was of course the Minnesota Vikings. But
yeah,
I mean, we certainly don't need that extra.
Yeah. No question about that. Like, but what a fun game. Another like signature performance by Daniel Jones. He's it's not just that he's looking this good and that he's running this well and all that, and that he has this command of the offense now and such a comfort level, and he gets them out of stuff that that isn't going to hit, and he puts them into goods. Like, he's obviously he's made incredible strides as a quarterback, but he's doing it with like this is just such a like land of misfit toys in this receiving core, right? Yeah. Like, you know, Richie James has looked good. Hodgins has looked good. Slayton has had moments
in this game,
but like these aren't guys that the rest of the NFL wants, right? Like this is as bad as it gets, and none of these guys are like plan A receivers for the team. And the fact that Jones has been this good so late in the season against quality opponents is just it is truly impressive, and it puts him, you know, in fantasy terms, it puts him in a very different conversation than he would have been, you know, 2-3 months ago. He's been excellent. There are many paths to upgrade this receiving core with veterans who can make you better right away. So I trust that they will do that next year.
Now teams, I think, just sorry to cut you off.
Oh, yeah.
Now I think feel like teams will want to come to New York. Like and not just because like, okay, Daniel Jones is there, and Daniel Jones has been fantastic. He was fantastic in this game. I think he had like three attempts or three completions over 15 air yards in this game. Like, they schemed it up really well around, and look, the Vikings defense stinks. That's we gotta say that this defense stinks. It stunk. Yeah, it stunk on Sunday. It's sunk all year long. It's been poorly designed, whatever, but still, Jones did dice them up in the short and intermediate game. But I feel like teams will want to come, or guys will want to come play with Brian Daboll and these guys in New York, because look at the way they've revived Saquon Barkley's career. I mean, Saquon Barkley was fantastic in this game. Look at the way they revived Daniel Jones' career. And also, like, as we're talking about, you know, head coach hiring season or coordinator hiring season, like, we can't say enough good things about Brian Daboll and what they did there. Like, Brian Daboll has no ties to Mike Kafka. Brian Daboll has no ties to Wink Martindale. Like, so often we see, all right, well, I need a coordinator. Let me go Ron Rivera this thing and get somebody from the Friends and Family program. Like, what's Rob Chudzinski doing? You know, let me get a Friends and Family guy in here. Brian Daboll did like the exact opposite of that. He's like, I think what Mike Kafka does with the Chiefs is cool. Like, let me get a piece of that offense. Like, Wink Martindale, what he does defense, cool. Like, so I don't know. They built such a culture there that I feel like they can probably recruit some like big time receivers potentially come there next year.
Oh, it is such a good point, because you've got creative play calling now, and you've got a quarterback that everybody believes in at this point, which, again, crazy. I don't think we would have said that, you know, nope. 9 months ago, would we have said that everybody believes in Daniel Jones? But how can you not believe in Daniel Jones now with all that he's done with this receiving core? Such a good point. I think they're probably, you know, and the Bears fan in me wants to say, oh, who wouldn't want to play with Justin Fields? But I think the Giants are a much more attractive I'll use the word ecosystem than what Chicago is offering right now. Like, that's just a great landing spot for a veteran, like, ready to win wide out of almost any type, because they can upgrade everywhere in that receiving core. Again, like, you know, like, shout out to Hodgins and James, who've played great and well above anything that I think we would have reasonably expected. But, you know, these are not stars exactly.
No, definitely not. Although I think Isaiah Hodgins might have something. I'm finally going to have to do reception perception on Isaiah Hodgins, because it's enough already. Like, I got to do it. So I got to do it. On the Vikings, you started to talk about them here. How do you feel like they come out of this game? I mean, just look, in some ways, it's great that Kevin O'Connell got them to the playoffs. And look, we can dog them for the fraud bowl stuff all year long, but they made it to the playoffs in the first year of a new head coach. With a roster that I think is a little bit overrated because of guys like Justin Jefferson and how great Jefferson is.
Yeah.
And, you know, TJ Hockenson, by the way, 10 catches in this game. Your guy TJ Hockenson, you know, great midseason trade. But this is a roster that I think leaves me wanting for more this year.
Yeah, well, I mean, you made the point that the defense is just an absolute disaster. Like, they could not get off the field. The closest thing that came to a meaningful stop was when Slayton dropped that ball late in the game, and he was inconsolable about it, right? But that wasn't, you didn't stop him. Like, he was going to run free.
Stop himself.
The only reason he dropped that ball is because he was looking downfield at the you know, acres of green ahead of him. Like, that was just an objectively terrible defense. And they were, you know, for a long time, they were living off of turnovers. and you start facing good teams who aren't going to give the ball away. And, you know, then what do you got? They couldn't stop anyone. So that was the major problem. I thought, people were really frustrated, understandably so, with Kirk Cousins throwing a, 3-yard check down on 4th and 8 for the game's final play. But there's nothing else available on the field. And he was getting dragged to the ground, right? Like, you know, it was a bad, a really sour note for his season to end on, because it was by and large a good year. And I thought he played a pretty good game. And his only other options there were KJ Osborne over the middle of the field with a route that looks like it's about to get undercut, and Justin Jefferson down like near the boundary with two defenders around him. I don't know. I didn't see anything else there. I actually thought one of the things I wanted to highlight from this game is I thought Xavier McKinney, the guy who made the tackle on Hockenson, he just played an awesome game. Not just there, but like, you know, some of the bracket coverage on Jefferson. There was obviously Jefferson had like an efficient games in terms of like he caught a bunch of targets, but they didn't go anywhere. And when the Vikings took, there was a play. I don't have the moment in the game when it happened, but there was a play where like they took a deep shot, and it ended up being McKinney and Jefferson running together alone, and they take a deep shot to Jefferson, and McKinney like did the thing that you don't see often enough, which is like if a defender can just get ahead of the receiver, just slow down. It was so great. Like he just screened Jefferson away from the ball. He got a step ahead of him, and he just kind of stopped. And all that Jefferson can do is make contact, right? And I don't know. McKinney just played an absolutely wonderful game. And I don't know if he got a game ball. I feel like he should have got a game ball. He was great.
Overall, like, I'm glad you brought that up, because it was just a fun defensive game plan overall from Wink Martindale and the boys there. Like, this is a team in the Giants who, because, I mean, Wink just, he is what he is. They play man coverage. They blitz a ton. Like, they had seen, Justin Jefferson before. They had already had a game plan on film for what they did against him. But the Giants in this game, they played 76.8% zone coverage. Like, that was like not even close to what they were doing in the regular season. So it was a great game plan by Martindale. Great game by Xavier McKinney. I'm glad you highlighted that. I think the Giants, look, they're going against the Eagles next round. Like, that's going to be tough for them, but hey, give them a lot of credit there. On the Viking side of it, that Kirk Cousins play is so well highlighted, because that's kind of a microcosm of Kirk Cousins' season. Nobody was hit more than Kirk Cousins this year. Yeah. He was often under pressure because of his offensive line. And like, if you take away Justin Jefferson, I don't think this offense has a lot of guys that can hurt you. You know, Dalvin Cook had an okay fantasy season. They're one of the worst rushing teams. Like, from we talked about like overall production standpoint with the Chargers earlier, the Vikings were actually a terrible like success rate team. They were a terrible EPA per rush team. Like, they were not an efficient running game. I think Cook has to wear some of that. I think the line has to wear some of that. Maybe the scheme a little bit too, but they didn't run the ball well this year. They didn't run the ball well in this game. And outside of Justin Jefferson and TJ Hockenson, once they got him there, I think they have more names than game for the Vikings right now. So they have some work to do in the offseason for sure.
You know, one other thing that I'll say about Jefferson, and this isn't about him specifically so much as his usage. I would like to have seen him, you know, if he's going to see like bracket coverage this often, he's going to see this much attention. He only saw 7 snaps from the slot, and he saw no targets from the slot. And like, let's move Justin Jefferson around a little bit, and let's put him in positions to where he's got more field to work with, and where he can really make plays, because like, that guy's as good as it gets in the league right now. And I would have liked to see him used differently.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think if you ask them, they probably lost a lot of faith in the other receivers to separate against man coverage. Like, once, if you have two guys on the outside there and Jefferson in the slot, I think those throws on the outside were kind of drawn dead, and that might be part of why they did that. But I agree with you. Like, I mean, I can't believe, you know, about a calendar year ago, we're wasting so much breath on like Justin Jefferson of the Cooper Kupp role, and the guy like barely played in the slot. It was like KJ Osborne was their slot receiver all year long. So keep that in mind again when we go into like coach hiring season, that stuff's not always a direct like layover there. All right, let's talk about the final game here. Bengals 24, Ravens 17. the Ravens definitely put up a hell of a fight. Their defense was awesome in this game. You know, they forced Joe Burrow into some uncomfortable situations. You mentioned it that earlier that the biggest play in this game ended up being a defensive touchdown when Tyler Huntley. That will be one of the most frustrating moments like in Ravens history. Tyler Huntley going I think I saw Nate Tice compared to like when Rafiki holds Simba over the over Pride Rock or whatever. Like that's that and it was so true. I mean, he wasn't even close to getting over the goal line. Bengals just pop it out. Yeah. Sam Hubbard takes it all the way back. That was kind of the turning point of the game and a very dramatic one, but it was a closely contested game, and mostly because of Baltimore's defense stood up to the task. And also for Cincinnati, and I guess we can start there. Like, if they're going to make a long playoff run, we've sort of like yada yada and forgot that, oh yeah, their cornerback position is just decimated with injuries, and they give up, you know, a big touchdown to DeMarcus Robinson on a double move, and they got to go deal with Stephon Diggs and, you know, Gabe Davis on go routes next week. That'll be tough.
Yeah, that is a huge problem. They have a couple of pretty glaring weaknesses right now. One of them on the line again at corner is obviously a glaring weakness. Baltimore is so tricky because part of you wants to say, okay, like at some point we got to change our offensive philosophy here. We can't keep doing this because there's no deep playoff run in it, but they were so close. They were so close. And as I understand it, the play with Huntley was designed to like go low, right, and get a big push, and he didn't do it. Like, he didn't do any of it. He tried to go over the top, didn't work.
When they go low, we go high. Tyler Huntley took it literally.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely wild swing in that game. But like, I always have trouble in these situations where like you want to say, okay, this is how many years now that you know, this super run heavy, don't worry about who our receivers are, we don't need them anyway, sort of philosophy hasn't worked. And yet, my God, they were so close to winning this game with their backup quarterback.
It's really hard to talk about the Ravens because of the Lamar Jackson stuff. And
yeah,
you know, I mean, I wrote in my Care Don't Care recap article, like, let's live in the world for a second that Lamar Jackson's going to like come back to this team and everything will be fine. They'll franchise tag him. It doesn't matter that he didn't fly with the team. You know, by the way, Mike Williams didn't fly with the team. You know,
it was such a good point you made. Like, how common is it for guys to like fly with the team and be on the sidelines? Like, there's a lot of injured dudes tied to these playoff rosters who were not on sidelines for their team, but we only talked about Lamar Jackson.
Yeah, I think we're talking about it because of all the other stuff that's going on, but I don't know that that actually matters. Like, he's done with the Ravens because he didn't fly with the team. I don't know that that actually matters, but you know, if you live in that world that everything is going to be fine there, and I don't know that that world is reality, but if we live there for a second, I think they do. I'm not saying like they need to fire Greg Roman, because you're right. Like, there's a benefit to being this much of a frustrating run game to prepare against. And, you know, J.K. Dobbins had some, you pointed out on the outline that he had some thoughts on his post game usage. He said that the quotes were, you know, kind of taken the wrong way, this sort of stuff. But it was pretty hard to not do it. Like, the part about his usage and being like the guy to call the goal line. Yeah, I don't think that's too hard to miss there. Maybe the Lamar stuff, like saying, like, oh, if Lamar had played. Because I think everybody's trying to like make the narrative that, you know, and Sammy Watkins did Lamar no, of course Sammy Watkins did Lamar no favors when he talked about it prior to the game, like Lamar should be out there or whatever. But Marlon Humphrey also added, now I'm going a different direction, but Marlon Humphrey also added that like he's limping around the facility. He's not healthy. Like, we know that. But I think this offense does need to evolve in some way. Like, they can still be this very difficult run team. They can be this very difficult team to prepare for from like a rushing game perspective, the heavy personnel set, stuff like that. But you've got to be a better pass offense. Like, whether maybe you hire one of these guys like Scott Turner or a Mike LaFleur or something that I think has designed good passing concepts, but isn't that great of an actual in-game play caller to help you like design the pass game a little bit more. And then I love Rashad Bateman, but you can't walk into a season with just Rashad Bateman and nothing else in the wide receiver room. You've got to be able to recruit some big, some veteran receivers to come here. You just can't go into next year like this if Lamar is even there.
Yeah, it's such a good point. Thank goodness that like Marlon Humphrey was like the one adult on this roster who like had Lamar's back. Wild, absolutely wild to hear Sammy Watkins take shots at Lamar Jackson. Like Sammy Watkins, who just showed up and hasn't been a particularly relevant player in a long time anywhere.
Yeah. Thanks for coming by, Sammy. Thanks for coming back and making things even a little more uncomfortable than they already were. Thanks for coming.
Seriously. And that there's just like there's a little bit of this team needing to sort of get its house in order, because for Dobbins to come out at the end of a season in which, you know, he needed maintenance during the year. It's not like J.K. Yeah. Dobbins was the rookie year version of Dobbins all season. Like he needed time off. He needed maintenance. He needed, you know, he obviously couldn't finish runs as well as he could, you know, when he first came into the league. So like he's got a lot of work to do in the offseason, and then to complain about usage at the end of this one, I don't know. It's a little bit disrespectful to Gus Edwards, who's a pretty good player. It's a little bit disrespectful to, you know, the organization generally. I was surprised by it because he basically got, you know, his usual role plus, you know, like when does J.K. Dobbins get more than a dozen carries? And I know he's, yeah, that's what he's complaining about, but he like, this is what it's been. And it's probably what it's going to be going forward too. Like you're not going to be a 25 carry guy. You know, you're not as good a runner as Lamar Jackson. Like when they have everything in place, like you're the second best rushing threat on that team.
I do think that's part of the problem though, at this point, that the, I mean, whether you think like Lamar is milking the injury or whatever, this is 2 years in a row now where he hasn't been able to finish the season he finished the season banged up. Like I get that, like it's the live by the sword, die by the sword thing, where if you're going to live with Lamar as a rusher, like you're going to put yourself in some tough spots here. Like I think Dobbins, to his credit, he was fantastic in this game. At some points, I do think they kind of got away from him needlessly. He's made a pretty incredible comeback, but I do agree with you that the Ravens, for a lot of different reasons, need to get their house in order. And I will be really fascinated. They'll be one of the most fascinating teams to talk about over the next 2 to 3 months here. Like, do they make any coaching change? I think John Harbaugh is going to be there. I think John Harbaugh he should be there. But they've sort of capped themselves at a ceiling here. And I wonder, the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results. And I think the Ravens, since they turned over Lamar to the start as a starter, they have been the exact same team. I think it's a little tough to look at the roster and think, the problem here is eight. The problem here is the quarterback. And if we just get a different quarterback in here, we can really open things up. I think that's tough to justify. Like it's like, if you're going to bring Lamar back, and I think you should, by the way, you should bring Lamar back. Like there should be no circumstance where it's like, yeah, we got it. Unless the relationship is totally too far gone. This is not a Russell Wilson situation. The guy's in the prime of his career. You know, you should bring Lamar back, and you probably got to meet him halfway from like a, we need to evolve the offense standpoint.
Yeah. And you need better receivers. Like
need better.
I mean, there's just no question about it. You're so right. And like Rashad Bateman cannot be like, you can't go into another season where your plan is for Rashad Bateman to absolutely have like some supernova season. I mean, he's a good player.
Even if he was going to have that supernova season, and I think he started off really great, he gets hurt and then you're back to the DeMarcus Robinson show. And like that's just not real.
Yeah. You can't be the team that has to go out and find Sammy Watkins off the discard pile, in the middle of the year. It just can't happen again.
All right. That is going to do it for us. Andy, feels like it'd been forever since you've been on the podcast. We did talk to each other recently during the Treviso Babes rap party. One last Treviso Babes shout out for the road, man. Andy was nice enough to grace us with his presence for 15 minutes during the over Zoom for the Treviso Babes wrap up party.
They had like a high school sports banquet. That's what that was. That was so, everybody got an award. That was incredible.
Everybody got an award. Shout out to Julie. She ends up being our winner. She gets to win a free subscription to receptionperception.com after some arm twisting by my mom. I'll tweet out a few of the awards and some of the stuff, but yeah, Andy and I zoomed in for some of it, and they had a blast. I think we got out of there before the drinks really started flowing, Andy, which is probably for the best. I think my mom had to do a lot of designated driving that night, from my understanding.
Oh, that was a party. It's incredible that they did that. Like, you know, the highlight of most leagues is obviously the draft and getting together in person. And it was so not enough leagues do the postseason. Hey, let's all run it back. Let's all get in the same room and give each other crap and sort of celebrate this stupid thing that we all play. So that was really great to see.
That was great to see. And yeah, mostly because I think there's a lot more hard feelings at the end of most fantasy leagues, but these ladies have somehow, despite all of my meddling in the process, have somehow maintained a pretty.
Maybe that's the benefit to never making a trade throughout an entire season, is that there just are not hard feelings at the end of the year.
Yeah. Outside of Julie, who was the one who did trade Tammy, our last place finisher, trading back the Patrick Mahomes, Tom Brady thing that we talked about on the pod this year. So shout out to them. They've given us a lot of content. They are very convinced that they are getting a reality show here at Yahoo Sports next year. So we have a lot of planning to do for that in the off season. Another shout out. Happy birthday to Lord Podcast. I mean, my God, the greatest podcast producer on planet Earth. Shout out to him. I know he had quite the weekend. So shout out to our great producer, John Gennaro, Lord Podcast. What would we do? What would we do without the Treviso Babes and Lord Podcast, Andy? It'd just be me and you talking to each other about kickers and the worst players in the NFL here usually every Monday morning during the season.
That is exactly right. We talked about nothing but dogs in the waiver wire show. So man, the Treviso Babes really saved this thing.
They saved our ass this year. All right, I will be back on Thursday with the Betting Bros to preview the divisional round. My God, we've got some big games coming up this weekend. That's going to be absolutely electric. Until then, we're out.